3, 2, 1, go! Welcome back, everybody, to the Triad of the Force podcast, a podcast from Puerto Rican friends coming together to do deep dives into Star Wars, Indiana Jones, and other nerd-related media. Today we have someone's back. Mo, welcome back to the podcast. It's been a minute. How's it going, buddy?
Hello, hello. Glad to be back. I never left from a certain point of view. So.
That is true. As we've said since the beginning of the year, when we said you were taking like that hiatus, even if you were gone, you would always be with us because you know it's something. You know we've known each other for. Has it been 20 years at this point? It's definitely 10 years. Definitely 15. I don't know if 20.
We don't talk about numbers anymore.
We don't talk about numbers, especially because I'm not good with them.
Yeah, technically, yeah. Technically, it's closer to 30 years.
That doesn't make sense. Pero, yeah, we're not going to discuss numbers. Because, one, at this point in our lives, they are a little depressing. Because now we're talking about decades and not just years, it's decades. So that's not the most pleasant way to look at how we've come through age. But you know, it hasn't been in vain. We've shared lots of good memories and much more to come. So, but before we get started, like, what have you been up to? I know there's been a lot of changes in your life. I know you're starting a new phase in your life. So yes. I want to tell us a little bit about what's been going on with you, because I know everyone's dying to know. You're very beloved. So, you know, I'm sure all the fans would love to know what's going on in Mo's life.
So I've embarked on my new journey of rewriting my own history. Of course, everybody has to rewrite their history whenever they want. And I am starting my journey for veterinary school. I am going to combine, you know, everything I've learned and all my passions to, you know, help out animals, big and small, dogs, cats, hopefully horses, cows, everything in the middle. Like,
yeah. Alaska Malamutes, you know, because since you love Chewbacca, want to do like course, an Alaska Malamutes. So you're going to like Chewbacca, honestly, Star Wars connection.
I want to put it out there. I want to one day treat buffaloes. I feel like there's a call there for some reason. You know, they're big, they're hairy. You know, there's that.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that. But obviously we know like you were there in Puerto Rico, so you moved to the West Coast to like start pre-veterinary school, right? Because there's no veterinary schools back in the island that I'm aware of, or is there?
Yet. There's one that's waiting, like accreditation from the American Veterinary Board, mm-hmm. Medical Association, something like that. Whatever is those guys that tell you, yes, this school is approved or this school is not approved.
Yeah.
so hopefully Puerto Rico will have a veterinary school, but so far it doesn't. It does have good pre-vet programs, which is what I'm starting. So, you know, it's weird to be, as we talked, in later decades of your life, going back to...
I mean, but that's awesome, you know, because one, it takes it takes a lot of courage, right, to be able to, after you've completed your first round of studies and starting a career in something, it takes a lot of courage to kind of say, like, whoa, we need to stop and look back.
To reassess.
Let's restart. It's not easy to restart. New beginnings are always difficult. So kudos, man. Kudos to you for, you know, having the courage.
It takes, and also being grateful, you know, that I have the opportunity, and everybody has the opportunity to, you know, stop and be like, hey, I'm going back to school. Like,
that is true. Not everyone is able to do that, so we always have to be grateful.
So yes, got to be grateful for that.
So I'll drink to that. Cheers to Mo and new beginnings. And new beginnings with Triad too. I know we had been like texting like a couple weeks or a month ago or some stuff of like having you come back at like at some capacity at the tribe. We still have to like iron out like what's that gonna look like. But yeah, this is not a one-off return of the Mo. Expect to see Mo back at Triad at some capacity in the future. Yes, it's gonna happen.
Absolutely.
And we're definitely very excited for the future, because this has been a whirlwind of a year. It's been from the highest highs to the lowest lows. I was in Puerto Rico at the beginning of the year, so you and I hung out a lot, and obviously you know a lot of things that had been going on in my life at that point, which, you know,
that feels like a lifetime.
Bam. It does feel like a lifetime. It does feel, honestly, it does feel like a lifetime, because I feel like this year's split in two. Basically, it was like pre Star Wars Celebration and post Star Wars Celebration, basically. Because let's just say that pre Star Wars Celebration was not going too hot. I mean, it's not that things were bad. You know, I'm very lucky to say life is good, right?
Life is good.
You just like want certain things to go certain ways, and when you don't get that, and you don't have anything else to complain about, then you get hooked up on the minutia. But after Celebration, kind of things started falling in place. I got a new job, so new beginnings there. So I feel like there was a little, we're all finding our renewals too, because, you know, Nani started her new journeys a couple of years ago, starting law school, and now she's like at her internship. So she's also going through new beginnings. I feel like there's a lot of renewal in the Triad, and you know, it's been a lot of good things. The podcast has been kind of chaotic this year in terms of release schedules and not completing review series and all these things, but that's part of the course. Let chaos rule. You know, we had a very stable last year. What was it, 2022 for the most part? 2023 has been a little chaotic, but that doesn't mean that it's been all bad. And let me change the color of the lights, because we have to kind of talk about something pretty cool. If anyone that's listening, I had the blue lights in honor of like the subject that we're going to talk about a little later in the episode, but now I switched the lights to be orange, because out of the blue, unexpectedly, we got an invitation to go to a premiere that I was definitely not expecting we would get. We got Mando earlier this year. That's a TV show. Obviously, we're always grateful to get those invitations, and we're always humbled. But I never thought that we were going to get this it that we has. Got. Because, as everyone knows, the next step of evolution, the Triad ascends. And, you know, everyone knows, and if you don't at this point, you're living under a rock. It's time to find out. There's a fifth Indiana Jones movie coming out, Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. And we had been speculating for a couple of months and weeks before the lead up to like the release of the movie next week, if there was going to be a premiere and if we might be blessed enough to be invited. Then we found out that they were going to premiere the movie at Cannes Film Festival. So once that happened, I'm just like, well, clearly, if they're premiering the movie at Cannes, then they're not going to do a premiere, because, you know, that's kind of a big deal, right? To do it at the Cannes Film Festival. So that happened. So hopes and dreams quashed. But then a couple weeks ago, I'm on my computer, I'm working, and all of a sudden I got, bam, email, Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. And,
Oh, Lord,
sweet baby Jesus. Like,
sweet baby Jesus.
Sweet baby Jesus, pray upon
seven
me.
7 pounds laid out.
Lord Carl Sagan. I was an emotional wreck that day, because it was something that I never knew could happen. And I never expected, I expected a premiere to happen. I didn't expect for a little old Triad to be invited to, you know, Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny premiere in Hollywood, California. And yeah, that was something that happened. It happened 1 week ago today. This is coming out tomorrow, Thursday, but we're recording on Wednesday. So it's been a week since it happened. And at this point, it just feels like a dream. You can see the lanyard over here if you're watching.
Yeah.
And holy crap, Mo. I wish that all three of us could have gone, because it was such a incredible experience. And one of the things that I was thinking about on the lead up to the premiere was like, who's going to be there? Obviously, James Mangold, the director, you expect him to be there. Phoebe Waller-Bridge, you expect her to be there. Harrison Ford should be there, right? He's the title character.
Hopefully. You never know.
They might be like, whatever, I'm over this. Grumpy, I don't care for Grumpy Harrison. Exactly. Like, I'm done.
I got paid, I'm out.
Exactly. So that was like the triad, so to speak, of people that I was hoping or praying. Well, yeah, praying. Fine. It's a parlance. We'll use prayer. We can talk about what that means at some other episode, I guess. But yeah, that was my triad of people that I would have hoped to see in this premiere. And it's like the Holy Trinity, right? Of Indiana Jones movies, which is Harrison Ford, Steven Spielberg, and wild card, George Lucas. I'm just like, if the creator is at this premiere, I'll ascend. And we're there at the premiere, and holy crap, I see Harrison Ford not that far, but like pretty far up in the line for the red carpet. So I'm just like, okay, one check mark. Harrison Ford is here. Saw Mads Mikkelsen, which was incredible. But then all of a sudden, everyone starts yelling. I'm just like, what is everyone yelling about? I look to my left and bam, there he is, Steven Spielberg.
Oh, Lord.
Daddy Spielberg, he was there. And I thought I was going to have a heart. I thought I was going to have a heart attack, honestly. I never thought I would see Steven Spielberg in the flesh. And I can't even believe I'm saying that sentence.
Spielberg in the flesh.
Like, what does that even mean? You know, it's just like, what world is this? You know, it's that Steve, like, I can say that Steven Spielberg and I were like in, I'm not going to say we were in the same, well, technically we're in the same space, but I don't want to presume to make it seem that we were, you know, we didn't have eye contact. We have to, full disclosure. However,
let's just say you knew.
But Steven I knew,
yes. Steven Spielberg didn't know you were there.
He did not know I was there. He might have felt the triad of the Force presence. He might have felt that presence, but he didn't know I was there as a singular human being. But you know, creme de la creme, and then all of a sudden George Lucas also shows up, which, holy crap, saw George Lucas, and he did not look like he wanted to be there, let's be honest.
He probably didn't want to be there.
This was probably Steven Spielberg and Kathy Kennedy cashing in a favor, being like, hey man, you need to be here, this is the last one, and after this we're not going to bother you ever again. But he looked weird, I have to be honest. I mean, obviously I know he's an older man now than he was a couple of years ago, and obviously everyone ages, but he looked like he had lost some weight, and like, he never wears the best tailored clothes, but this time all of his clothes looked particularly baggy, so like, he didn't look well kept, you know. So I was a little concerned for old George's health there, but saw George Lucas, saw the creator. And then they had like a little surprise there while we were in the theater before the screening began. Steven Spielberg was doing kind of his spiel introducing the film and how important it is to like have all the original people that came up with the franchise be here, you know, for this final film. He's talking about George Lucas and then Harrison. And then all of a sudden he says, oh, and the maestro that has made the score for all of these five movies that make them sound spectacular as they sound, whatever. I mean, I'm paraphrasing at this point. But all of a sudden, when he says, like, the maestro John Williams, all of a sudden, because John Williams is not on stage. All of a sudden, when he says that, the screen starts coming up, and it's a full orchestra that Williams is conducting. And, like, I swear, I almost died. I almost died. Because I never thought I would see John Williams live in my life, and all of a sudden there he is conducting the Raiders march.
Goosebumps.
I still have goosebumps thinking about it. But yeah, no, it was Johnny Dubs, as I call him now, because we're friends. It was Johnny Dubs.
Yeah, of course.
Johnny Dubs and Spiel B, we're best of friends now. We're all besties now. They're coming to the triad one of these days. But no, it was amazing.
You all had an old-fashioned after the old movie.
Oh, yeah. Top shelf, obviously. but speaking of having drinks after the movie, like... have to definitely shout out one of the better parts of the movie, which going to these events, which is, you know, watching the movie and like being there is awesome, but it's always accentuated and made even better when you're there with like really good friends and good colleagues, like in the whole Star Wars, Indiana Jones community. And, you know, gotta definitely shout out Nikki Kumar from the Imperial Senate podcast, was there representing Acto Radio. Great to be with him and his sister, Priya, Ken Knapsack, Sky Talker, Charlotte and Caitlin, Tori Fox, Savannah, Blast Points, Brandon from Talking Bay 94, like so many awesome people that we got to hang out with and kind of share this experience, which is one of those once in a lifetime things, because even if they make another Indiana Jones, I doubt that John Williams will be involved. I very much doubt that Harrison will be. I mean, man, who the hell knows?
It's all about the money.
It's all about the Benjamins. But yeah, but I think it's going to be the last time that all of the original squad is going to be together to make a film like this. So it's, I'm getting emotional just thinking about it and talking about it. But yeah, we're going to have a full spoiler discussion next week once the movie comes out. But for now, we're going to keep our pie holes shut because, you know, we want everyone to be able to enjoy the film as it was meant to be enjoyed. I will say, and take this with a grain of salt, because I was in a very suggestible environment. It was in an environment that was very much designed for me to be in an optimistic and positive state of mind. But I definitely did enjoy the film. I think it's definitely, at least for now, I'm going to do a rewatch next week. Pero definitely my third favorite Indiana Jones film, obviously right after Last Crusade and Raiders of the Lost Ark. Because as everyone knows, I'm not a fan of Temple of Doom, but I am a Kingdom of the Crystal Skull apologist. And I do think that Dial of Destiny is better than Crystal Skull, which I'm honestly not that hard. But sorry.
Oh, yeah, that's fine.
Sorry. Listen to our last episode with Alex. Chia LaBeouf. You'll see why. Well, I was going to say something about the movie, but no, because it's a spoiler, so I won't say it.
No spoilers.
Let's just say that this movie acknowledges every single movie. I'm not going to say it in what capacity because I was going to spoil some things, but definitely very good. I did feel, to be fair, that it was a little long. I feel that some things started to be like redundant at some points when they were like going after the MacGuffin, but I think they're drops in the bucket in terms of like the whole. I think it was definitely a solid movie. I think I gave it 8 out of 10 or a 4 out of 5 on Letterboxd. That's my review. Maybe I'll update it once I review it. But yeah. Dial of Destiny. Awesome. Mo, what are you looking forward to most in Indiana Jones and the Dial? Are you even excited for Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny?
Well, I'm one of those that definitely lives under the rock. It wasn't until like you told me that was
today's like, oh shit.
No, I was like probably like 2 days ago. But so I always enjoyed Indy, like growing up. I loved greatest, like after the Lost Ark. Like that it's like one of the second par with like those like 80s movies that you know your parents will show you, like, oh, this was so cool. And, like, it was cool, like, you know. So it's always interesting to see. I'm not always a fan of like remaking a franchise and it gets to the point where, like, you know, are you just making it for money or are you making it for the art of it?
It's not always either or. Sometimes it's both and.
No. I mean you can't. You obviously, you know, you're not separating both. Like they're part of each other. You know, but
it is called the film industry, not the film charity. After all,
true. But you know, like it, I'll probably go watch it. That's for sure. I'll have my opinions about it.
Of course, as we all do. But as always, the important thing is to be have come from a place of good faith to be able to discuss these things, because some of the reviews that I've started seeing online are very disingenuous and just in bad. Yes, I think it's bad faith because a lot of them I think some of them are hilarious because they say Harrison Ford did a great performance. If this weren't an Indiana Jones movie, this would be a good movie. But because it's an Indiana Jones movie, it's not good. And it's like, oh my God. This is just people that are just like wired to like, no, I'm going to hate
everything's
it.
Bad. Yeah.
And then it's just like, oh, it's just the Disney soulless cash grab, blah, 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 blah. And like now they're like being, oh, King, this is good. It's the same thing with the prequels, right? Like when the prequels came out, people hated them, even though it was George Lucas making them. Same thing with Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. When it came out, people hated it because it's George and Steven Spielberg taking a dump on your childhood. But now that it's a new one done by Disney, now it's like, oh, no, no, but you have to do it like Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, like George and Steven. And it's just like, you can't win.
Yeah, you can't win.
You can't win because, you know, some people just don't want to be open to the experience. They want to be like 30 years old, 40 years old, and sit down on this movie that they saw when they were maybe like 12 or 13 and feel like that. And it's just like, you can't feel the same way when you were a child, especially because when you saw those movies for the first time, you had no expectations and you had childhood naivete. Now you're a desensitized grown-ass man or woman or NB person, and you have your baggage, you have your cynicism, you have your expectations, so it will never, never feel that way. Which in a way justifies having new franchises and new films and new stories instead of like reboots and sequels, because with a new story, you can feel that way because you don't have any expectations. But anyway, I'm rambling. Let's go to the topic at hand. This is, after all, I mean, we're doing like our Indiana Jones weeks here, talking about Indy with Alex Damon, and then we're going to talk about Dial of Destiny with Brandon from Talking Bay 94 in a couple of weeks. But, you know, we are at heart a Star Wars podcast. And one thing that I'm actually really looking forward to discussing with you, because it's something we have talked in the past before about, especially with what happened in Rise of Skywalker, and that is the Skywalker lightsaber. One of the most iconic weapons in cinema, one of the most recognizable weapons in not just Star Wars, but all of cinema. Anakin Skywalker's blade passed on to his son, Luke Skywalker, and then claimed by Rey Skywalker. And yes, she is a Skywalker. The blade, the blue blade that started all of this, you know, mythos of the lightsaber, the Skywalker lightsaber, which, as this episode suggests, is the Excalibur, which, like, I kind of feel proud of that pun, even though it might be lame, but, you know, I'm in my getting to my mid-30s, so I guess bad puns are part of that. But yeah, like, I feel like there was a concerted effort in the sequel trilogy to mythologize this weapon even more than it was in the original trilogy, and way more than it was in the prequel trilogy, to, like, the point where I feel like the intent falls flat, right? It's destroyed in The Last Jedi, but then it's reforced in Rise of Skywalker. There's a lot of like mythos here for which we can compare and contrast to Arthurian legend, and then Lord of the Rings a little bit, which we'll get into detail a little bit further on. But to me, it's a concept that kind of falls flat because it's something that really doesn't go anywhere. Mo, how did you feel about the reintroduction of the Skywalker lightsaber in The Force Awakens and then its subsequent treatment in the sequel trilogy?
Yeah, I mean, it almost felt like forced to me, always like that whole, no pun intended. because, you know, if let's go back to where we first got introduced to this lightsaber. You know, it was, in any hope, we got to see, like, oh yeah, this is your father's lightsaber from back in the Clone Wars. There's nothing special about it, except that, you know, hey, my dad had a cool lightsaber. Mm-hmm, like, that's, I mean, that in itself is a really cool thing. Like, you don't need to mythologize that. That's a core memory itself. Like, you're getting, you're inheriting a weapon that's significant and mythological enough in their world that, I mean, in their universe, in the galaxy, that anybody recognizes a lightsaber. But to, you know, reconcile the fact that, hey, my dad had this weapon and now I'm getting it, like, you don't, it's almost like, you know, that is the point of mythology, to, like, bring those core experiences into your life. But like at this moment, you don't need the mythology because Luke is receiving that knowledge from Obi-Wan, receiving a physical object, like a representation of it. But then, you know, comes in the Empire Strikes Back and Luke gets the hand shot, like loses the lightsaber. And we all assume, you know, hey, that's it. That was the last time anybody will care, because next time we see a Luke with a lightsaber, it's the green lightsaber, which is even a cooler color than blue.
Hey, I 100% agree. Green lightsabers are the best.
Green lightsabers are the best sabers. And then, you know, we get the prequels, which obviously reintroduces the lightsaber, because obviously we already know that Anakin had that lightsaber. Like, that's how Luke gets it. But there's no concerted effort to make this like a mythological item, apart from, you know, hey, it's a cool item. Like, we all inherit cool things from our parents and our families that has minimum value. But apart from that, we don't attach like any mythological aspects to it. It's just, you know, that cool family heirloom.
Right.
And
Sorry. I was gonna add to that, but finish your thought.
No,
because I was thinking exactly the same thing, because I mean, I totally agree 100% with everything that you're saying. And I think it's how the weapon, right, is framed, especially with the original trilogy, but most of all with the prequel trilogy, which, you know, the original trilogy, like you said, like Luke just loses it. And it's a family heirloom, which he just loses. And Return of the Jedi doesn't even bother to acknowledge it. You know, it's just like, yeah, he lost it. It's whatever. Which I think is the poignant thing. It's not the lightsaber, it's the person. And I think that's what's the really cool thing about Last Jedi, Return of the Jedi, which is the Luke claiming his identity, right? By building his own lightsaber that, one, doesn't look like his father's lightsaber. It's based off of Obi-Wan's lightsaber. So it's based off his mentors. So that goes a long way, right, into saying something about where Luke sees kind of this legacy as a Jedi. And then the blade is attuned differently. It's green. It's not blue. So it's like, again, different from which it was going to be blue originally, nerds. Yes, we know that. And they changed it in post-production because it didn't contrast with the sky and Tatooine. Yes, we know that. But in the movie, it's green. So let's look at
that. That's canon. That's fact.
And that's canon. That's fact. I don't care.
You cannot change that.
Yeah, I don't want to hear that like originally it was going to be blue. And that's why I really like that deleted scene of like Luke finishing building the lightsaber in the cave. Because it's just like he's hooded in black, and it's just like, oh, did Luke turn to the dark side? What's he doing? It's like, you know, doing this new thing with this new blade. So that's the whole point on Return of the Jedi, right? Like Luke claiming his new identity and finding his place in the galaxy. By then, at the end of the movie, kind of rejecting his lightsaber and just throwing it away and being like, oh, you failed, your highness, blah, blah, blah. I am a Jedi, my father before me. And he defeats the Emperor. Not through the attack with this Jedi's weapon, but through compassion for his father, which I think is kind of like the whole point of that arc. And then when you go back to the prequel trilogy, they're even more flippant about lightsabers.
They're like, who cares? Obi-Wan, get a new one.
Obi-Wan has three different lightsabers during the prequels because he loses his first one. And
Ahsoka Phantom changes Menace. One every week.
Exactly. Obi-Wan loses his in the first movie. Loses his second one in the second movie. And then obviously in the third one, he has like his classic Obi-Wan one. And so does Anakin. Anakin breaks one in the second movie and then has it. So it's just like, yeah, it's just not to say that like a lightsaber doesn't have importance to the wielder of it, because you have to build it yourself and it has to be yours. And you have to attune the kyber crystal to yourself to be able to wield that lightsaber. But, you know, but the canon never reflects like that there's this mythic power lightsaber in that legacy sense, like Excalibur or other mythic weapons do. So like to all of a sudden imbue that in the sequel trilogy feels a little I don't want to use the word disingenuous, but I'm going to use it. A little disingenuous and doesn't pull the trigger in the way that I think the movie thinks it does. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, it's almost like if they, you know, this is the backbone of the Excalibur / mythical sword template, and they just like haphazardly added lightsaber elements to, I mean, and then tied it specifically to the Skywalker lightsaber.
Yeah.
Because if it was, you know, they tried to attune that same thing to like the experience of like attuned to the Skyber crystal and like that process of like, you know, being called rather than like finding or being bestowed this weapon, like Excalibur, like, you know, the lady in the lake.
It's
like, hey, like nature bestowing her gifts.
Right, which actually I fairly recently found this out because I did not know this, because I always knew that there was Arthur gets a sword, right? By two different means. There's the sword in the stone, and then there's the lady in the lake. And different accounts call that sword different things, but they're two different swords, but I think the consensus is that they're both Excalibur, but they're different Excaliburs. It's my understanding.
like Arthur legend is like the Frankenstein of like mythology. Like
it's like the X-Men franchise of continuity.
Yeah, basically. like you know, if you watch the animated series, it's this thing. If you read the comics, it's this other thing. If you read the new comics, it's this other thing. Like it all depends. Like there's like two versions of the lady in the lake. There's like,
yes, one's evil, one's good, and something like that.
And it depends on what you read. Like, but in essence, there is a magic sword that is supposed to represent, you know, the next king of Britain, whoever is able to hold this magical
sword. And they do treat it that way, to be fair. I mean, even assuming whichever one we want, like let's assume it's the sword in the stone type of thing, where like only, you know, the worthy can take it from the anvil or the stone, whichever version you're reading. And I think it was a sword of Uther Pendragon, right? It was like his father's sword that was like, who cares? It's the thing about being worthy and to be the king of the Britons, and you remove the sword. That's technically not what Rey does in this one. I think the Rey version is more akin
to the Lady
of the Lake, because Maz Kanata technically is that Lady of the Lake, right?
Yeah, we don't know anything about her. Like, you know, this is we just know that, you know, she's probably older than Yoda, and like she's still like banging around. Like, we know Yoda was like dying in his deathbed. Maz is just like having fun, like she's jumping and like. So
she probably felt Yoda's death, and she's like, oh, "Whatever, man. I got a couple hundred years on you.
I got time to find somebody else." Like.
I got time. I know of a certain Wookiee that I wanna hit up. Pero, I mean, Maz is technically that Lady of the Lake who's like bestowing the sword to Rey,
they don't even bestow it to Rey. Rey just finds it. It's almost like, oh, you found my hidden treasure.
Like, yeah, but like it's the Force that's calling Rey. So in a way, like she's validating that the sword is calling her. Obviously it's not one to one.
Not a one to one parallel. Yeah,
it's a, you know, it's, but it's if we want,
it's a Force, general template. If you want the general template,
it's the general template. Joseph Campbell might agree. He might agree with us.
He might. but then, you know.
Very big might.
But then in the rest of the movie, like, you get that scene, and then the rest of the movie, it's just like, you know, the weapons you use to defeat the bad guy against the red weapon. Like, until the very end when you get, like, Kylo being like, oh, that's my saber because it's my family.
Right. Which I think is something that was interesting in terms of like tying then the sword to legacy and history and then what does that mean? But the problem is in The Force Awakens, that means nothing, right? It's just like, oh, legacy means kind of nothing, because like for Kylo, it's just an heirloom and doesn't have power in of itself. And then for Rey, it's just like, well, you know, you're the chosen one. So the sword's calling to you. But why is it calling to you? You know?
And you have to like ask yourself, like, why would this be important to Kylo? Like, it's not like Luke sat around and be like, hey, I had this really cool blue lightsaber. No, like, I'm sure this was, you know, just a story that, you know, if at some point Ben asked, like, oh, what happened to your hand? It's like, oh, yeah, your grandpa chopped it off. And
he chopped off your... I mean, the only reason it's important to Kylo is because it belonged to Darth Vader. It belonged to Anakin. And he's like a fanboy, which I think actually pays off in The Last Jedi in that sense, because anyone who's listening to this channel knows that we're big Last Jedi fans. And I think it's the best of the sequel trilogy in terms of like trying to say something, you know, and like being not just like, let's reproduce the feeling of Star Wars, but trying to give more meaning to what that mythos was. And I think that it's especially poignant in that fight with like between Kylo and Rey with the Praetorian guards, because, you know, it's about that Skywalker legacy, right? Luke rejects the legacy of the blue lightsaber because he's rejecting the Jedi legacy within himself and within his family because he's afraid of what that means. So the whole movie is kind of framing this whole thing of this is a quote that everyone remembers, right? Let go of the past because if you have to. But really, the movie isn't saying that at the end. The movie's saying that, yeah, like, accept it, acknowledge it, internalize it, but move past it. Like, you've got to, like, take the things that matter from that and then be able to get rid of the things that don't, you know, contribute to you moving in a positive and healthy and a direction of growth, which I think was so brilliant in terms of destroying the lightsaber, which I think, as opposed to, wait, before I say this, did you finish Mandalorian season 3?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm like,
yeah. Okay. Yeah, I didn't want to like spoil anything for you, which I think there's two lightsaber destructions, right? There's the Last Jedi lightsaber destruction, and then there's the Mandalorian darksaber destruction. And one works and one doesn't. And I think that, and we talked about this in our review for the episode in our Mando series, so check that out if you haven't. Link in the description below. the destruction of the darksaber in Mando was so flippant because it didn't have any means or importance or acknowledgement to the story after all this setup about what it means mythically and culturally to Mandalorians, and not just to Din or Bo or anything. It's like, no, to everybody in Mandalorian culture, the darksaber means something. So I'm not against destroying something. I can be an iconoclast. I can go, you know, and support the decision to destroy something, but the act of destruction must mean something. Like V for Vendetta, right? It's not the building, it's not the explosion, it's the symbolism behind the destruction that means something. And like, and these moments have signify something. And when Mandalorian, they destroy it without even acknowledging it, it's just like, oh, okay, well, so nothing. It's anticlimactic. It's cinematic blue balls, basically. And The Last Jedi is the opposite, right? Because they destroy it because they're fighting over identity. They're fighting over not just light and dark. They're fighting over love. They're fighting over what it means to be a Jedi. They're fighting over legacy. And then that fight is so powerful that it ends up destroying the heart of the lightsaber, which is where the Kyber crystal is, which I think is so powerful. But even more powerful than that is in the end, when Rey's just holding both pieces of the broken lightsaber, and then she's like, oh, how can we build a rebellion out of this? And Leia just holds her hands and says, like, we got everything we need. And it's just like, boom, so poignant, because then it's like, yeah, that past can be destroyed. Those icons, those symbols can also be destroyed. But like the meaning within them and the hope that like all these things mean and like the optimism that we have for all these objects are not in the object themselves, are they're within us, right? So it's up to us to be able to imbue something beyond that. So that's why for me it was frustrating after like having such a clever destruction of an icon, which no one would have expected, right? You don't expect someone to destroy the Skywalker lightsaber after introducing it after 30 years. But then to be kind of disappointed and just see it in Rise of Skywalker, be like, okay, well, I just fixed it. It's like instead of going in the direction of like building on top, you know, building layers on top of it, it's just like going back and Mandalorianing it. It's just like, well, you just whatever. It's the same thing with Kylo's helmet. Oh, he destroyed it because he's moving past his Kylo identity into something else. But then Rise of Skywalker is like, oh no, I'm just gonna reforge. Never mind, I'm just gonna reforge my helmet. Same thing with the lightsaber. Oh, we destroyed the lightsaber because what, blah, 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 X, Y, and Z. It's like, oh, never mind. We're going to just rebuild it. Don't worry about it. Yeah. What did you think about that payoff of the destruction and then the reforging of the lightsaber? Because reforging can be cool. And we'll talk about a movie that did reforging right.
I guess, you know, if we talk like strictly to like that Excalibur mythology, you know, it sort of lines up like one, almost one to one with like, you know, the Lady in the Lake, the Nubia story where, you know, Arthur breaks the sword and Merlin is like, okay, come with me, bring your broken sword and throw it in the lake, and somehow, you know, you'll get the reforged sword with all the magical powers. Then I guess, you know, mythologically, you know, it kind of makes sense that, you know, you have to destroy yourself, like up to your very core until you find your core and then you build back up. But like you said, you know, it's not, I mean, I guess physically it could look the same, but you know, if we're mythologizing an item, then there should be like a physical difference. Mm-hmm. It shouldn't be like a one-to-one. Oh yeah. Yay. It's back together. We fixed it. It right. Should be more like,
and we don't see it, right? We don't see like what reforging means.
No, but we do see the end result. It's just like the thing.
Yeah, yeah.
There's like how more cool would have been, you know, to, you know, that same lightsaber they showed us at the end for Rey to have been shown like throughout the story, you know, taking parts of the. That broken lightsaber and using those parts to combine with their own staff. And
yes,
100%. Like you said,
that was right there. That was a setup. It was right there.
Like it was just right there. Like don't leave that to the very end because there's no real value to it. You're just putting it there because it's the next logical step, but you're not building towards it.
Yeah,
and I think that's probably what's gone from it, like what loses its touch with the mythology, because it's almost like the Last Jedi tried to like, okay, you know, the they already gave me back the saber, let's just show Luke rejecting the saber, like, hey, this is in my past, this I don't care about this, like then showing like, okay, this is important for the next generation because, you know, Luke is, it's in essence that's what they're showing, but Luke is one generation, now you have Rey and Kylo, which is the next, picking up the pieces from, which is what it should have been, you know, like Luke throws it away, they pick up the pieces, rebuild.
But that's I like that, and that's something that like I've always kind of thought about, and I don't know if they didn't do it because they also did a similar thing in Jedi Fallen Order, which, you know, Cal Kestis, when he rebuilds his lightsaber, he rebuilds it with both of his master's lightsabers.
Yeah.
So it's just like two different hilts, which I'm just like, wow, there it is. So I don't know if that's why they didn't do it in Rise of Skywalker, because they did it in the video game. But I think it would have been poignant. I think it would have been so cool to see Rey start with the yellow lightsaber. Kind of like Luke started with the green one at the beginning of Return. It's like, she's okay. No, I let go of the blue lightsaber, the Skywalker lightsaber, because I'm letting go of the past. So I just built my own lightsaber and just doing that. And then there's some point in the movie, right? Second act or whatever, when like she's at the lowest of lows, like, as you always have to do in a movie. And then she realized that she can't let go of the past, that she has to kind of make peace with it and be able to claim it. and accepted and incorporated into herself. And but what better way to then, like, if you are going to reforge the Skywalker lightsaber, then why don't you just reforge it as an extension of yourself? And then it's just like she has her yellow lightsaber and then the Skywalker blue lightsaber, and then she has like a staff like it was set up in The Force Awakens with her staff, you know, a staff double bladed lightsaber, and one ends yellow and then the other one's blue with like the Skywalker lightsaber, and then it's just like makes sense.
And then they do the whole trick where it combines and it turns green.
And then, oh shit. No, the world's not ready for that shit. It's like, oh shoot. My mind kind of exploded with that. So it's like, oh Lord.
Even in that sense, the colors, like green is the combination of blue and yellow. So it's almost like you could have built it up as in, you know, the past is blue, then came look and like combined two things, and then Rey came and distilled the essence of it and came with like a yellow version, which is closer to like white light. But until we get like the white saber.
Well, we have white lightsabers, which are like the purified crystals, which we'll see in Ahsoka out on Disney Plus.
Yes. August 26th. I forgot about this. Yes.
Very excited for that one. That's good. See, I missed you. You have those little like nuggets of something. Bam! It blows my mind. Maybe we'll see it because Star Wars Celebration London, they announced the new Jedi Order film for Daisy Ridley. So Rey's coming back, 2026, I think it is, and we're gonna see Rey rebuild the Jedi Order. So ipso facto, we'll see the yellow lightsaber again. But you know, you gotta sell action figures. So like, how is it gonna be different now? And it has to happen. It has to happen. And like, I don't think that they'll bring back the blue lightsaber because I think let it rest. You buried it. What if she goes to Acto and she gets Luke's green lightsaber? Because we know it's there.
No, please just stop. And then, new lightsabers. Bam,
No, I'm not saying. I'm not saying
at this moment. Don't do that. But if bring back Mace Windu's lightsaber, that's more Excalibur than any other lightsaber.
Stop.
Okay, it's the one and only.
Now we're going to dangerous territory.
It's a purple saber that has to mean something. Like we've seen blue, we've seen green, we've seen yellow, but there's only one
yellow purple.
One single. There's only one single purple saber, because Samuel Jackson said, "I want a motherfucking
purple." And George Lucas like, going back to reforging can work, right? Because it worked, it worked in Lord of the Rings.
It works in Excalibur.
Because the Shards of Narsil, we see them in the Fellowship of the Ring, and it's the blade that cut the ring from Sauron's hand. But in doing so, you know, Sauron stepped on it, you know, oopsie, and broke it. So it's a broken blade, and the elves keep it in Rivendell. And this is actually one change the movies did, which improved upon on the books. In the books, Aragorn actually gets the reforged Narsil in the first book, like before they leave. To go when the Fellowship leaves Rivendell, Aragorn has the reforged Narsil, but in the movies they switched it to be a little more, you know, epic of like, oh, I'm reclaiming this piece that makes me, you know, not worthy, but he's already worthy. But like that, that's
the external validation of your inner awakening.
Right, exactly. And the epic scene of like Elrond coming up and being like Anduril, flame of the west, and I was like, oh shit,
and it's so powerful because you know you have Elrond, which is, you know, all the time has been like, hey, like leave that guy alone, like he's gonna die, he's immortal, just we're elves, like, and then like coming down to like almost like stepping down as just a messenger. It's not even like he's coming as a king of the elves. He's just coming as the messenger, like, hey.
Some guy, yeah.
Here's your magical format.
Because that's another change, right, from the books to the movie, where, like, in the books, Aragorn is always kind of like, yeah, I'm the heir, and I'm going to reclaim my throne. And the movies, they changed it so he can be a little more Jon Snow about it. Like, I don't want it. Like, I'm not worthy. So I'm going to have his hero's journey of being able to kind of find the will within himself to be like, okay, I'm going to claim what's rightfully like the whole kingship thing is always weird morally and ethically weird. But you know, whatever, work in the movie, it works, and the reason for the sword works because it's something that he's been rejecting and something that carries weight, right? It's the legacy of the descendants of Aragorn that did this incredible feat, and this thing, this sword that has been untouched for millennia because it's so it's too holy, right, to be able to do anything with it until this moment when it's called upon to be brought back together because its purpose is now greater than its previous purpose, which, like, thematically and story-wise works so well to not just, like, the sword itself, but to further Aragorn's character growth, right? Because the sword has a personality because it has done things, not just because it has a name, but naming swords is cool, but also because it furthers.
Hey, I mean, I'll see the thought of that. Naming swords
that is true. That's why Visions Volume 2, Sith by Rodrigo Blas and El Guiri Studios, one of the beautiful. And one of the sword there in that Visions episode is actually based on El Cid's sword, which I'm losing, I forgot the name. Do you remember?
I forgot the name.
Let's see.
Our professor, Selma Davila, will be like hitting us in the.
Yeah. How come you remember that? Guys, whatever.
It's been a few decades.
It's been a few decades. I'm sorry, guys. But it has a cool name. Narsil or Anduril, as it's called after its reforged, furthers Aragorn's journey in a way that the Skywalker lightsaber doesn't really do for Rey. Because even at the end,
La Tizona y Colada. Tizona y Colada.
I was not going to be able to remember.
Yeah, I was not going to be able to remember that.
Sorry, guys. But yeah, like, the Skywalker lightsaber doesn't really do that for Rey. I mean, it doesn't in a hollow way. It doesn't really.
It's not organic. If you grab the backbone of the mythological sword and, you know, you try to, like, haphazardly stack it together, it makes sense. But, I mean, it doesn't make sense. It's there, like, you know, which is because, like it's important, like, at the end, Arthur always returns the sword. And I think that's what happens with, like, Rey. Like, Rey returns the sword. So, I mean, the lightsaber stuff.
Well, she doesn't return it because she's not putting it back where she found it. She's putting it somewhere. It's weird because she finds it in a random place. We don't get any context about finding it or what it means because, like, yeah, we don't know anything about that.
I mean, for all we know, Mass was just, like, working down there at the shafts and the lightsaber just fell on her head and just grabbed it. Like, don't know.
And we are finding out because they're exploring it in the Star Wars comic books by Charles Soule, but we still haven't gotten to how it got to Mas Kanata, at least as far as I know. But in terms of the movie, yeah, we have no context for that. It's like, why all of a sudden is, like, the lightsaber doing this specifically with Rey? We don't, especially when she's a Palpatine. I don't know. And then, I mean, the most poignant thing that they could have done with that lightsaber was the destruction of it in Last Jedi. But then, yeah, the follow-up, she's like, it's reforged, but we don't see it being reforged. We see Narsil being reforged in The Lord of the Rings, and it's a big moment. It's just like, oh, we have to get this sword back together because, you know, it needs to go on this journey now with the wielder of the sword, which is Aragorn. Here's it, Rey already has it, whatever, I reforged it. And then she's like, when she's done with this, she's like, okay, well, now I'm just going to bury it. I'm going to bury it somewhere where the person that wielded this sword, both of them hated. Like, Anakin hated Tatooine, and Luke Skywalker hated Tatooine, and she's burying that sword that means apparently so much in a place where both of its wielders hated living. So I don't know. It's weird. Like you said, Mo, they're putting the thing Like, you know, they're technically the things about what it means to be a mythic weapon are there, but it's kind of in a way that it's just like, okay, I guess okay. It's there.
Yeah. Like, yeah, cool. That's like
cool story, bro. Yeah.
Yeah, cool story, but yeah, like, put a little bit more effort, but like,
well, you know, they did what they could. They did what they could, and unfortunately, like in some pieces, they didn't completely hit a home run. But you know, but hey, but it's still Star Wars, and it's still great, and it gives us so much to talk about. It's been I don't know how many years since Rise of Skywalker, and we're still talking about some of the things it did right, other things it did wrong, and it's a gift that keeps giving. But you know, we're not gonna keep gilding this lily, and it's, you know, it's time to, you know, wrap up a little bit. So Mo, do you have any final thoughts to kind of conclude like our discussion about the Skywalker lightsaber and its relationship mythically with Excalibur or other, you know, mythic weapons that we can think of? Because clearly we're spinning our wheels just with Excalibur because we don't know that many myths apparently.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the mythical swords that, you know, break through, like, become like space and time, like they've been throughout history. Like, it's you know, it's that idea that you fine tune that sword so you can break through the veil of knowledge and darkness, kind of thing. So, but if you know, if I were gonna give it like a rating to like how Star Wars used it, I mean, I wouldn't give it past the C. Like,
it's a passing grade, though.
It's a passing grade, like, because you know, they still tried. Like, I really appreciate, like, you know, it's not mythical in the sense of mythical, but it isn't in the sense of the personal journey, like the way it's used in the prequels and the original trilogy. Like, it's a family heirloom. Like, it has that meaning. Like, we all have families. We all have histories that we compare ourselves to, we strive for, or we fight against. Like, it's there's a bunch of things. Like, and there are physical elements that can remind us of those things that we either strive for or want to stay away from. So, like, why? Like, I don't see why you need to push it past that. Like, not everything has to be mythical. Like, the things that have to be mythical are those that you cannot so easily represent. But, you know, if it's an item of family heirloom that has put that power within your family, you don't need to make an Excalibur. Like, Excalibur was there for a reason. You know, it's nature telling, like, yes, you are the rightful king of England or Britain. Like there's nothing special about the lightsaber sword. Like, you don't get to be, oh, hey, I'm the leader of the Jedi Order. This is not like Harry Potter where you get the Elder One and then it's like the best one, right? Like, it's not even that. Like, it's just not even the darksaber is that. Which, like, it's just a cool-looking lightsaber, as far as we know. Like, it's that idea that, you know, you can remake a lightsaber. It's just like an umbrella. Like, you lose it, you make a new one. Like, it's not... Like, that's what the Clone Wars have shown us. That's, like, what every other piece of, like, Star Wars media has shown. It's just like, hey, it's just a weapon. Like, you can... Yeah, you can name it, you can give it like all your personal power to it, but at the end of the day, that's it. There's nothing magical about it apart from that connection you make with it.
Yeah, I totally agree. I have nothing to add to that. But with that, I think that's an excellent high point to culminate this discussion about the Skywalker lightsaber and its comparison to its place mythologically within the Star Wars saga and its comparison with other weapons of such caliber. You see what I did there? Mo, always a pleasure. You know, catch up with you. Very happy to have you back upon the triad, you know, podcasting thing, whatever we call this experience that we share. Definitely looking forward to having you come back in the future. So people that are listening and or watching, stay tuned for that. It's happening probably after August. As you know, there's still things to figure out. But yeah, we have been Triad of the Force. Thank you so much for listening, for watching. We definitely appreciate every minute that you watch or listen because it means the world to us. If you haven't yet, please make sure to like, subscribe, follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Do all the things. Hit the bell for notifications. Leave a comment. Comments help boost the algorithm. Yeah. We don't know how algorithms work. But, you know, but do it because it helps.
Okay, but if you want to say, you know, you suck, say
you suck, like, yeah, it do helps. It. We probably won't respond to that, but we'll appreciate.
But do it. We'll do it
but,
for the algorithm.
But we'll appreciate. But we'll appreciate you boosting the algorithm for us. But you know, if you want to support the channel, those are some free ways that you can do it. You know, other ways are liking our posts on Instagram and Twitter, and other ways are, you know, going to our T Public store and getting a shirt, you know, help us, you know, pay off
some,
or a hoodie, or, you know, or a sticker, help us pay to go to pay off that flight to LA. Cause you know, it's not cheap going to these things, and we'll definitely appreciate all the help for the channel, and we need new equipment. So, you know, every little bit helps. But with that, this has been Goose and Mo of Triad of the Force. Thank you so much. We hope you enjoyed this discussion. Keep tuned for more Indiana Jones content in the next coming weeks. And Nani's eventual return once, like, her, you know, case thing that she's working on cools down a little bit. But with that, enjoy the rest of your day. Thank you for joining us, and may the Force be with you.